Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome to Ask the Editors on One Radio. You've got questions?
Okay. Hi, everybody. Not really sure what happened to the intro, but this is Jennifer Taylor. I'm here for Ask the Editors. You guys have questions, and they have answers. And join us as we offer a panel of experienced, energetic editors who will answer all of your questions to the best of their ability, in addition to questions that were emailed in during the live recording of the phone lines are open. So call with your questions, if you have any, and go ahead and ask our editors. Again, my name is Jennifer K. Taylor, and tonight I'm here with Kenny Sword, and we're going to take a different look at editing tonight. Kennedy is not a so-called editor. However, he is a co-author of several writing projects, and he's worked with editors. And he's going to pick up where we left off last month. We're going to talk about personal editing, writing with other authors, making changes when you're given them back from the editors, and what to do with the edits once you're finished. So, Kenny, thank you so much for being here.
Hi. Thanks for having me.
Okay, we've kind of been talking behind the scenes a lot about basketball, so we're kind of in the zone right now. So now we're gonna kick back, and we're gonna talk about some editing. And Kenny, I have a few questions for you. Tell us a little bit about your writing projects where you've been working with these other authors.
I think primarily the project that you're referring to is a series called Dead West, which was a sort of zombie Western series I wrote with the guys from Ragnarok Publications, Joe Martin and Tim Markowitz.
Yes. How did that come about?
It was funny because before Ragnarok, you know, Joe and I had started out. I'm actually the author of a series called Gnome Saga, which is an epic fantasy series. And Joe and I had been working on that. He'd been editing chapter by chapter for me. We were just having some fun at the time. But then we self-published that. Well, I self-published it with Joe's help. And then it seemed like I was working on book two, and just out of the blue, Joe came to me and said, hey, Tim Markowitz and I had this idea of this, you know, sort of really horror-filled Wild West adventure, and we want you to be the word monkey. So I said, oh, okay. You know, in that short period of 2 or 3 months, Joe and Tim had already thrown together Ragnarok Publications and were working on serials and bringing authors online. So for me, it was kind of a no-brainer. I was just like, yeah, I need to jump on board here and see where this goes.
Well, that's really neat. Usually when you think about a writing project with multiple authors, you usually think about an anthology where everyone is kind of writing their own story and there's not a lot of collaboration. So that's what really kind of intrigued me. And let me ask this, how do you guys go about handling your self-edits? How do you handle your portion of that?
Well, we kind of approached it. I'm not sure how other authors who team up do these types of things. I've heard Weiss and Hickman, they used to alternate chapters, I think, in the Dragonlance stuff. I can't confirm that, but I think that's what I heard. But the way we approached it was we were just going to do, like, the bulk. Each person would take a bulk of the tasks. So Joe Martin spent some time doing research on the Nevada area and the old Donner's Pass, you know, where all the people tried to cross over into the West and just ate each other for the most part. Some of them did anyway. So he did all the research. He put together all the characters and turned out to be about 15 characters in this group. If you can imagine sort of like a Walking Dead in the Sierra Nevada West. And he put all the characters together, sort of them to Tim. Tim worked on an outline. We estimated we were going to do just a short serial for each one, so 30 to 50,000 words, something like that. So I guess like a novella for each one. And Tim did the outlining, put all that together, and then just basically handed it to me, and they just said, "Word monkey, go." So it was kind of easy in that sense to keep the flow going, because we weren't alternating, and we're all so busy. Everybody's so busy, right? So trying to like hand off chapters to one another would have been pretty clunky, I think. So I just took the first draft. I did the whole first draft myself. And that was fun, because I got to take all of their characters and all of their ideas and just sort of, I didn't even have to think about it. I just kind of did a couple of days of study and then just threw myself into it. And that was a lot of fun. The only problem I had was when I realized, how do I get 15 characters fully fleshed out in a novella? So I was like, wow, you know, everyone has some things to say here and there to kind of build their characters and flesh them out. It ended up working out, and they did the final edits of those. So I basically handed over my draft to Joe. Joe edited, and then he handed it to Tim, and Tim did a final edit, and that's what we did.
What was your word count?
I think we ended up, they added, I think we ended up at about 45,000 for the first book, and they added, they went over my stuff and sort of added, Joe's really good with the dialogue, and he really ramped up the dialogue, and I think they got us to about 50,000 for each book, and we released them independently, like, you know, book one and book two, and then they also have a volume, they put those together in like an omnibus, I guess, they call it volume one, and those are all out on Amazon. So it was a lot of fun. It was interesting. We had some, you know, I would ask questions during the process. So I would be working on a chapter, and I go, guys, what does Nina do here? You know, she's the main character. I'm not real sure. And we would sometimes have good conversations, and sometimes we would argue a little bit. But ultimately, we ended up with, you know, coming to agreement on most things.
And what was the process for you when Joe would take the edit, and then would he bring it back to you, or he would just pass it on and then you would get all the edits back at the same time?
Yeah, they would go through Joe and then Tim. So it was, I often wonder how that went, because, you know, I'm sure conversations happened without me where they were, you know, Joe would edit one way and then Tim might come over and edit over top of that. So I'm sure they had some discussions, and I know I caught a few of those in our tri-chat we had going. But then they, you know, once they handed it back to me, I did see the things that, you know, I could see their changes in blue, like Joe's in blue and Tim's in red, and I could go through and sort of, you know, make my own sort of decision on whether it fit or not. And I generally accepted most of their changes, so I trust those guys, and I thought anything they wanted in there sounded pretty good.
Okay, so you're talking about different colored fonts, and that gets into more of like a document view. So you guys use the MARC reviews and all of that, like in the Word document. Is that what you're talking about?
Yeah. I'm sorry. That's right. We heavily use feature in Word. So yeah, once we get those, it actually comes in handy, because you can, once you get all the edits back, you can change the view to erase the edits to see what was before, what you originally had, and then you can bring the edits back in and see see how it sounds with their changes. So it's a really, really nice feature, and we use that heavily.
Okay, did you find it really easy to use? I know some people don't like to work with Word. They'll use a different, you know, open source or something like that may not have that feature. Did you find that easy to use?
I found it easy to use. At first, I didn't understand it. I kind of, especially the different views, I just knew when Joe would hand me, and I'd had some experience, like I mentioned before, we were just having fun editing the first book in my Gnome Saga series, and that's when I started to get sort of used to the Word revision and change tracking. And I was like, Joe, what is this? How do I? And I had to sort of learn from him how to do that. But once I got the hang of it, I found it.
Okay, well, I think we lost Kenny, and we'll try to figure this out. In the meantime, if you guys will just hold on a second, we would greatly appreciate it. Sorry about the hold, guys. You guys probably don't know this about me yet, but it is my it's my claim to fame. I am the Blackwood of technology, and as you can tell, if something's going to go wrong, it may go wrong with me. So while I'm trying to get Kenny back on the line, what I'd like to do is actually talk to you guys about the Word feature that he was talking about in Microsoft Word. You know, it used to be where you could just type up a regular document, and then if anybody wanted to make changes, they would have to come back in and recolor different fonts. And now, actually, they have a tab, and especially if you have, I think it's 2010 or more recent, they actually have changed the formatting, and you have tabs across the top, and one of them is called Review, and that Review tab is what Kenny's talking about. So if you guys have never looked at that, I challenge you to check that out, because it would be very beneficial when you're working with editors in the future. And I think Kenny is back on the line. Are you there?
I am here. Can you hear me okay?
I can. Okay. Don't you just love technical difficulties? I'm telling you.
Well, luckily I had a backup ready to go, so.
Well, I was telling everybody that I'm the Blackwood of technology, so if something's going to go wrong, it really will go wrong with me. It just happens that way. Okay, let me ask you this. Do you have any tips or tricks of getting the manuscript ready to send over to somebody to edit for the first time?
I think they would be tricks, maybe tips, but I guess I work from a point of view of I really want my editors to have a good time with my manuscript. So I try to make sure that, you know, everything is complete. After the first couple of times I went to an editor, they would Joe would send me a message and he would say, "You didn't even finish the sentence." So I thought, wow, I must have flown through that draft and just totally went from one thought to the next. And since then, I've really tried to pride myself in handing in the best documents that I can. And with that mindset, I think it's important to make sure that, you know, and I heard your past show on self-editing, to try to take it through a round of self-editing, you know, try to revise it a little bit so that it's the best that it can be. And there's some technical things I think you can do as well. I know I hear grumbles from my editor friends about authors that turn in messy manuscripts. I don't know if you've heard of that. But I've heard, you know, things like that. And so I asked, you know, what would it take to make a manuscript less messy and cleaner? And some of the things are like the find and replace. I don't know if anyone uses that who's listening in, but like to kind of get rid of the double spaces and the empty paragraphs and the tabs and things like that, you can use the find and replace in Word. And I'm not sure you were mentioning maybe some of your listeners don't use Word, or maybe they use OpenOffice. I think the same feature applies there. And so you can go in there and do that kind of technical stuff where you select the whole document, and then you replace the double spaces and things like that. Just try to provide the cleanest document that you can.
Exactly. And there are so many different tips and tricks about Word, and I wish I knew them all, because every time Word is revamped, I know they went from 2010, I think, to maybe 2012, but I know they have a 2013. And every time that there's something different, they add certain features like this review feature that they added in 2010. I never could really get the hang of it until I sat through an actual computer class and I had somebody teach it to me, because I couldn't figure it out on my own.
Yeah, it can be a little challenging sometimes, and that's okay. If the traditional techniques work, I fully support that. Ultimately, the writing should be fun. The editing should be somewhat fun. Do what feels good. That's what I think.
Okay, well, here's kind of a tricky question. How hard was it to accept the editing from other people, like accepting their opinions on what you've written?
That's actually a really good question. It can be a little painful, especially, life is going by fast. You might be working on another manuscript. You're right in the middle of that manuscript, and you start getting back critiques about your past manuscript, which can put a dent in your ego, right? You're thinking you're great writing this new first draft, and then there comes someone with, what did you mean here? I don't get that. And can you clarify this so I can edit this, And then it throws like a whole wrench into how you feel about writing for about a week. It's just like a total nervous wreck, emotional. But I think what I've learned to do is to just approach. The first thing I do is if I'm working on another manuscript, I don't accept any edits. Like they can, my editor can send me something and I'll put it in a folder and I'll keep it until I'm done with whatever I'm working on. That was my first lesson, and that's just because I want to be in a good mindset to accept those. I want to feel good about something that I just completed, and now I'm going to go back and pull some edits up, and I'm going to get into edit mode and start working on those. I don't like the mix. I know authors do it all the time, but I kind of find it emotionally exhausting to be in writer mode and then correcting edits at the same time. It kind of drives me insane. So try to avoid that. And I think when I'm ready to start my edits and start looking at the corrections for those edits, I just try to have an open heart about it. I just try to say, just like I would approach any situation in life, I just want to do the best that I can. I want to produce and learn and, I don't know. That's sort of how I look at it. It seems to, since I've adopted that approach, my stress level's gone way down.
It is really stressful. I mean, this is a big thing. I had a friend of mine actually challenged me to do the NaNoWriMo challenge in November, and I've never been able to stop. I've been doing it for 6 years. I've gotten through, I think, 3 different manuscripts, and finally this last year, I completed one that I was really excited about, and I actually am getting to a question, so just hang on. I was told at the end of it, I really wanted to start editing, and a mutual friend, Becca, told me, if you will put it aside for 30 days, and then pick it back up, you'll see it with fresh eyes. I said, okay. So I put it aside for 30 days. I tried not to write during Christmas. I tried to give myself a break. But I could not get this manuscript out of my head. I mean, I was constantly thinking of things I wanted to do with it. And I did try. I tried to turn off my editor. And I came back to it. And I was just overwhelmed at all of the different things that I needed to change. I sat down with the first chapter and just about cried because it was, for lack of a better word, it was crap. The story was good. The idea was good. But my writing, I think because I was trying to push it into that 30 days, was just crap. I don't know if you've ever faced that, but if you're looking at your manuscript for the first time to do edits, what is the first thing that you concentrate on when you are doing your self-edit?
When I'm doing my self-edits, the first time, one thing that I found really helpful, and I don't know, this might sound silly, but I have one of those free reading programs. It reads back what you paste into it. So if you paste a chapter into it, I think it's you can get them for free online. It's like Dragon, Naturally Speaking, but it's like the ultra free versions. So I'll pull that up and I'll drop the first chapter in there, just copy and paste. And I use two monitors, so I'll have my manuscript on one monitor, and I'll have the speaking program on the other, and I listen to it back. And it actually doesn't sound as bad as you think. So that kind of gets me like, wow, that sounds pretty good. You know, I wasn't as bad as I thought. And actually, you catch a lot of things that way. Now, some of the pronunciations are funny because the computer voice doesn't get them right, and that's kind of a fun thing to go through. But for the most part, it's the same thing as if you were reading it back yourself, but it really wears me out to try to, you know, read back for hours and hours. I just get really tired. So I just have this program do it for me. And that's kind of how I go through the first draft. Actually, I do that a couple times. I do that before I hand it in. And then I do that when I get it back. And it kind of takes some of the stress out of it for me. Because looking at it, you know, reading is kind of it's something you have to work to do, which is kind of a thing in our society today. People don't want to work. You know, they want video games and things. The reading is kind of on the back burner for a lot of people. But and I think, you know, depending on your mood, if you're in a good mood, reading comes easy. If you're in a bad mood, it seems to be harder, or vice versa. So that's why having something read it back just seems so less stressful. It's almost not you, it's the writer, and you're just listening to someone else's piece. So that's kind of the first thing I do.
Okay, well, that's great advice. I've actually never thought about doing a verbal listening or even reading it out loud, but I will definitely have to try that one because that's kind of unique because I've never run across somebody who actually mentioned that. We actually have a question that just came in, and Samantha in California is asking, what should a writer do when she's waiting for the manuscript to come back from her editor? My editor has had my manuscript for 2 months and it's due back next week, and I'm wondering what I need to be prepared for.
I think it sort of goes into what I mentioned a little bit before about getting prepared mentally. Again, if you're working on a piece already and it seems to be, it's going to run smack into the day you're going to get that manuscript back, just be prepared to take the manuscript. You get it in the email, you get the edits back, just drop it in a folder. Unless you're absolutely under a deadline, which I guess most of us are. But if you've got a little time before you have to get to this, just put it on the back burner. Finish any writing that you're doing before you get to the piece. Or if you don't have anything going on, you're not working on anything right now, approach it as, you know, sort of an expectant. You're expecting these edits to come back. And again, just have an open mind. Maybe not worry too much about it. I think that's the key thing. And we're going to anyway. It's the curse of the writer. So, but I've learned to sort of be patient with myself. I guess I've got 5 books out now. So after a while, you just start to think, I'm so tired of going through this emotional, turmoil, so I'm just going to give myself a break and just, you know, when it comes in, I'm just going to look at it with an open heart, open mind, and just approach it as, you know, this is somebody that's trying to help me out, and they don't mean to be mean to me. So, and I don't know if that makes sense, but that's kind of how I look at it.
I've always said that it's like killing your child. I mean, you put so much blood, sweat, and tears into your book or into your manuscript, and then somebody brings back something that it looks like it's in shreds. I mean, it truly looks like it's in shreds. And my first thought, I'm a mom, so I mean, my first instinct is to protect what I've done and just like stick up for my child and all that. But then, you know, like you said, you have to take it as this person is seeing it from a different light. They don't it's kind of like the teacher. They are not emotionally invested in the project. They are trying to guide you to make it better for your readers, not just see it from your point of view. So I guess you kind of have to, you seriously need to come back to it as it's a team effort. It has nothing to do with you personally. It's more about, I guess the editor has your readers in mind more than you have your characters in mind, I guess.
Yeah, absolutely. That's, you hit it right on the head there, because it is a team effort. And as soon as you start seeing it that way, it becomes less of a stress, I think. You know, it's you and your editor, and sometimes they're your publisher, and you're just trying to put the best book out. And a couple other things that really helped me out was knowing that Neil Gaiman actually has, I think, three editors. He thanks all these editors in his acknowledgments. So I'm like, wow, he's got like five editors. So I'm sure that what he sends in is probably still brilliant, but, you know, he still goes through the editing process too. It's not, you're never off the hook when you're a writer, no matter how famous Stephen King, it doesn't matter who you are, or Anne Rice or Caitlin Kiernan, you're always going to be on the hook for edits and you know, fixing the things that people find. And you can choose to rage against that, but you're probably going to have high blood pressure. So just going with the flow is a little better, right?
If you don't, the undertow will catch you on the way out.
That's right.
What did you do with your writing projects after the editing process itself was over?
That depends. With Ragnarok, I am traditionally published. So the Dead West stuff came out under them, and then they republished. I'd originally published the first book of a series in the Gnome Saga, the epic fantasy stuff. Self-published book one, but then by the time that came out, Joe and Tim had Ragnarok off the ground, and they offered to go ahead and put the whole series out. So those books are actually out traditionally published, but then I have self-published, you know, stuff as well. So that's a whole different process, because a lot of times when you put something to your publisher or your editor, it's under a publisher. Sometimes you might not even see the final version of that, and they're on such a schedule, you know, a time frame. They just have to like crank this stuff out. So I know that on at least one of the books, I really didn't get anything back at all. But on another book, we had a little more time, so I got to do some corrections. And I was, you know, at first you want to be a little rancor at that, but I was okay with that, because I'd already worked with Joe and Tim, and I knew they were going to, you know, they were, again, trusting your publisher and editors, not being stressed out about it. It was fine with me. But now on the self-published stuff, it's a little different. I'm going through that whole process, like you mentioned before, where you do a first draft, you set it aside for a while, and I totally, when you were talking about your mind couldn't get off the piece and you're trying to get back to it, I totally have gone through that. But you end up, you know, once you learn to have a little patience, and you know that once you come back to it in a month or so, you'll see it from a different light, and you'll be able to make your revisions, and you'll make the overall document better. So it's kind of a different thing where I'm having to hire somebody to actually do the editing, and then I have to go looking for an artist and all that stuff, juggling everything, and then eventually it comes out. So it's kind of two different processes. You know, I've kind of got the traditionally published stuff, you know, like it's a long process. And then in between all that, I'm just sort of self-publishing my own stuff, or at least getting set to do that. So, yeah, I don't know if that answers the question.
No, it's fine. Actually, I was going to ask, you've mentioned self-publishing and traditional publishing. Why did you decide to go the self-publishing route?
I think originally I kind of started back. I've been writing for about 30 years, but I never, you know, I published some stuff and some short stories in the 90s, And then I just kind of dropped out because I didn't want to deal with, I just didn't want to go through the heartache of sending stuff out every week. And I was playing music at the time. Then about 2010 is when I got back into it because of the revolution, right? The whole self-publishing revolution. Ended up getting caught up in that. And I thought, you know, even if this book doesn't do amazing, it's still pretty cool to put a book out. So, and I knew I was pretty decent at it. So I thought, you know, I'm just going to like jump on this and do it. And then ended up wanting to do that, but then got picked up by Ragnarok. So that particular decision was just sort of one of naivety where I just didn't know what I was doing. And I thought, you know, I knew I wanted to put out a good product, but I really didn't know how to promote it. I didn't know how many people would actually buy it. But now with the, now that I kind of have that experience of, you know, seeing how the art is picked and seeing how the editing is done, now I've kind of decided, and also keeping up with the industry stuff that's going on, it seems to be kind of a thing now where people are wanting to read shorter works, like novellas seem to be a little more popular now. So what I decided to do was take some of my secondary characters in the Gnome Saga series that's traditionally published, and then sort of branch those off into, you know, little self-published novellas. And that's kind of, I don't know, it's fun, it's short, you know, you can kind of get them written pretty quickly. And I know so many editors now, you know, I've got a choice of editors I can use. So it's kind of fun to have that sort of side thing going while the big picture is being published, you know, and pushed by the publisher.
Yeah, it kind of keeps your feet on the ball and just keeps things moving. You're not waiting from one project to another.
Right.
I think you hit the nail on the head when you were talking about people seem to be more interested in the shorter stories than they are in big long novels. One of the reasons that I think it's kind of taking off is our movies and theaters usually last about an average of an hour and 20 minutes to an hour and 35 minutes. And it's like you get an entire novel in that time period. And people are just, I want it now. I want it fast. I want to be able to go to the next thing. They want to be able to sit down and read a whole story in one sitting, you know, just kind of get the whole thing. I'm guessing that that's probably why it's happening. But, you know, I mean, I don't have any data to back that up. I just know how I am. And I would sit through a 4 or 5 hour movie. I mean, if the Hunger Games had just been done in one fell swoop, I would sit there for 8 hours and watch it. I mean, I'm just that way. But there are a lot of people who, you know, maybe not have that kind of time to devote to it. Maybe. I don't know.
Yeah, it's actually really interesting because some of the feedback I've gotten now, the Gnome Saga books, each one, I don't know how I did this, but they end up being about 109 to 110,000 each, all three of them. I didn't plan it that way. I plotted them out. Well, the first two were written without outlining, and the last one I actually outlined. It's a whole other podcast, or that's a whole other show. But so I finally got into outlining, and it really worked for me, by the way. But they each came out about 110,000, and I got really good reviews on them. I've got something like 56 or 57 reviews on Goodreads for the first one, and everybody seems to like it. And I actually got a tweet today. Well, the criticism that I had, if there's any criticism, is that it's a slow developing thing. But I'm kind of, you know, I've been thinking in terms of the old school, you know, where you would read like Tolkien or like the Dragon Riders of Pern, McCaffrey stuff, and that stuff wasn't done in 30,000 words. You know, it was lengthy character building in that, and so that's sort of where I was coming from. And the funny thing was, I got a tweet today from somebody that said, despite despite some problem I had with the initial book, with the speed of it, this series is now my favorite series. So I'm like, maybe everybody should just have some patience, you know, and wait for some things to develop. And like you said, I don't know what it is. It's the movie, you know, the length of movies, you know, when it comes to editing, editors are going to be busy, right? Because they're going to have tons of, I guess they're going to have tons of novellas to do now because people are cranking those out. So, yeah, it's interesting.
It seems, yeah, it is. And it seems like more of the smaller presses that you would find on the internet are looking for those novellas. I actually saw one publisher that I was looking at, I want to say it was Monday night or it might have been last night, but they were looking for stories that were between 60 and 75,000 words. And I thought, that's kind of odd, but maybe, you know, that seems to be the trend these days. I have another question for you. When when you're talking about doing self-publishing and you're handling all of that on your own, what did you decide as far as your not really advertised, but your like your promotional tours and stuff like that? Did you do like blog tours? I've heard of some authors doing that, and some are doing tweet parties and stuff like that. Did you do any of that kind of thing?
Well, I haven't actually. I haven't done basically use my author page on Facebook. That's my number one point of promotion. And Ragnarok has Melanie Meadows, who's their primary promotion person. So I get some exposure through those two avenues, regardless of what I do, if it's on Ragnarok. If I do it myself and self-publish it, the cool thing about going with Ragnarok and going with a small, energetic press is we're all really good friends. We went to World Fantasy Con last year. We had a marvelous time, met tons of people. So as a self-publisher, you know, who's just going to take a little piece of that main series and self-publish that, for one, it's you can write it quick. You know, the artwork is, you know, I've got a line in for artists and things. Once you establish that, then promoting it just becomes sort of I'm latching on to the Gnome Saga series, and you're probably going to get, you know, some of the same shares and stuff. You know, folks are going to share your tweets. All the people from Ragnarok are going to be like, hey, this is, you know, because since it's sort of a novella of the series, they're going to use that to promote the series so they can sell more books. So I think you just kind of got to work it in. Now, you can do a completely different thing. You know, you can do a whole other series that has nothing to do with that. But I definitely try to plan mine around specific secondary characters from the series, knowing that it would probably help my promotion efforts. I don't know if that's an easy way out or what, but that was just sort of my mindset. You know, I didn't want to jump into a whole new thing, because with Mad Max coming out in May, I think, new Mad Max, I've been wanting so bad to write a post-apocalyptic Mad Max book. But I refrained from doing that, and I went with sort of what I thought was a smarter move, which was to kind of stick with my series. Because there's so much competition, right? So I'm not sure how good or how well an author is served by jumping around so much. I think, I don't know, my opinion anyway is I'm kind of sticking with my guns. That makes sense.
Yeah, it's almost like getting back to the write what you know kind of a thing. If you're in the groove and that's, you know, that's where your attention is and it's still flowing even after the book's done, yeah, I totally agree. That's probably a really good way to go. Mm-hmm. Plus, it keeps people interested in the series. They're still going to share it with other people. Those people have to get the first books, that kind of thing. So it just keeps going and going.
Yeah, and I can I'm sorry, go ahead.
No, it's okay. Go ahead.
Oh, yeah, I was just going to also just add to that. I can piggyback on some of the events that Ragnarok puts together. For example, we're having a Seth Skorkowski party on Facebook about a week, and I'm going to be able to feature some of my stuff on there, some of the Gnome Saga stuff, and I'll be able to talk a little bit about the novella that I'm putting together. So, you know, as long as I'm doing Gnome Saga, as long as I'm working for Ragnarok, I think they will work for me, if that makes sense. So, yeah.
Yeah, it does. It's almost, it's one of those things, especially with presses that either have a really good, strong relationship with people in the business, editors and graphic artists and things like that, or ones that are trying to build their business and they're doing a steady job of it, they're going into the you scratch my back, I'll scratch yours. You know, what works for you will work for us. Because basically, if you go through a publishing house, if you sell books and they're buying them online, the publisher gets their cut and you get your cut as well. So, you know, there's a reason for everyone to still stay active after the project's done.
Yep, absolutely. Yep.
And I've seen where there are a couple publishers that I've talked with that, you know, the editors get a certain percentage of the cut. The graphic artists get a certain percentage of the cut, but they don't get paid until the costs from the publisher are actually covered. So people are, you know, everyone who is invested in the project are trying to push the sales of the project. So everyone is actually invested. So that actually works out really good for everyone in the end.
Yeah, and that's exactly right, and that goes into, and that's, you know, that all kind of goes, and I'm probably speaking from a privileged state in the sense of I was really lucky that I knew Joe and Tim before Ragnarok came about. I really didn't know if they were going to publish me. I had to go through, you know, they were so familiar with my stuff, we worked together, that it seemed kind of a no-brainer. And there were some authors that sort of jumped right on. Mercedes Hardley was another one who had known these guys, and she sort of jumped in. So finding like a publisher that has some energy with them, I think, is really important. And that may be the most important thing of all, even if, yeah, I see a lot of negativity on Facebook, and someone will say, yeah, I'm putting this out under a small press, and then there's five posts, like, well, what are they going to do for you? You know, they can't do anything you can't do yourself. And some of that may be true, but if you get on with people that have energy and that are just pumping stuff out, and not necessarily books, but pumping out promotions and sharing on Twitter, and you've got all this great positive energy, that goes a long, long way.
And it's contagious. If they have the energy and the movement and they're excited about your project, it's hard not to get involved with groups and companies like that, that it actually encourages you instead of just kind of letting you be. It ends up becoming like this whole movement. You get excited, it's contagious, I get excited, it gets contagious, someone else gets excited. And, you know, it's like a feeding frenzy on some level.
Yep, that's right. Yep, you hit it. That's exactly what it is.
See, I am on point tonight. We are doing good. Okay, well, we've got just a few more minutes, and I wanted to give you a chance to tell us where to find you online and where to find your books.
Okay, yeah, sure. You can find me in a lot of places. I'm mostly on Facebook. Twitter makes my head spin a little bit. So I'm not there as much. I do try to post every day or two, and I follow some people. So Facebook, Kenny Sword, and the last name is Soward. So you can find my author page or my regular page, and we can be friends there. Also on Amazon, look me up by my name, and you'll see the Dead West series, and you'll see the Gnome Saga stuff. And KennySword.com, that would be the final place you find me.
Now, do you have a blog running on your website?
I don't do. This is going to be a funny and interesting topic. I don't do blogs. What I do is I have a YouTube channel. So I started off last year doing just some funny, goofy stuff, and I actually started doing readings from books like 50 Shades of Grey, and I kind of spoofed them a little bit, you know. Some people found them funny, some people cringed, but I did several what I thought were funny anyway videos, and then I also talk about if I have an upcoming book or if I have a giveaway going on, I'll just make a video and I put it on my author page, and people can go out and just watch my video and you know, do the giveaway, or if I'm talking about you know, my new book coming out, I might go out and do a reading from it. So I've kind of everyone's blogging, so I just thought, you know, why are people going to care what I have to say? You know, everyone's blogging, so I thought, I don't know, I would just go out and do it video style.
No, actually, I think that's actually genius, and I'll tell you why. This is the whole reason why we got behind doing podcasts and live radio, is people seem to want to know, like, take Stephen King, you had mentioned him earlier. They want to know more about Stephen King and get more of a personal view of him. What better way to get a personal view of somebody, either by video or by a live feed, where they can call and talk to you, they can hear your voice, they can now get to know your voice, and then when they go back and read your book, they hear your voice, not their own.
Yeah, that's
so.
Kind of
I really
I
think that that's. A, I think that's.
Yeah, and it's funny because that's an art in itself, and I can't say that I'm really great at it yet. I don't do it enough. I've tried to do weeklies, and could not keep up with the day job. The writing comes first, so if I've got 1,000 words to do that night, and I could make a video, I definitely write before I do videos. But I think if I did it more, I would probably be more successful. And I'm thinking that maybe down the line, like, you know, if I get enough readers, that it might just sort of steamroll for me and just be a lot of fun. Because it is a lot more fun to make a video than to, you know, oh, I'm going to talk about fighting, fight scenes, or I'm going to talk about, you know, whatever. Now you can just get right on there and say it, and just sort of raise your flag. And like you said, people maybe people will like you more, maybe less. I don't know. So I'll find out.
Okay, you had mentioned this, and I have to ask. Okay, George Takei from the whole Star Trek.
Yeah.
I have to ask. Have you seen his page on Facebook?
Yes. George Takei. Yep. I actually was a fan of his. Well, I was a Star Trek fan. I am a Star Trek fan. And then when he came on the Howard Stern show for a while, he was really hilarious. Just the polar opposites between him and Howard, and just some of the stuff that went on was just hilarious. And his Facebook page, I do follow it, and he's pretty funny.
He is. To me, he's a riot. I have to go to his page every day to find something. But the reason why I brought him up is because you were talking about doing the video about reading, like, 50 Shades of Grey. Did you see his reading of the 50 Shades of Grey?
I did. I watched his, and I watched Gilbert Godfrey's, too, and they're both really funny. I love that stuff. Ellen did one, too, and I thought it was funny.
Oh, no, I haven't seen Ellen's. I'll have to go back and look for that one. But, I mean, it's just, it's a really, his Facebook page, I follow it, and I don't necessarily hear his voice coming from his page sometimes. But the stuff that comes across is really close to his heart, and he makes a lot of things. Yes, he's funny and he likes to entertain, but he also has a way of reaching out to the public, whether it's through a certain platform or just a certain topic that's there. And, you know, getting on your listeners' levels and reaching out to them as people the way he does, I think he really does set a really good standard for authors or writers, anyone who's trying to reach out to an audience. I think he is very successful in that. And I think you are on that trail because of how you're doing it. Instead of doing the blog, like you said, everybody blogs and everybody's on Facebook. So trying to do something different, or even being the pioneer of something different, I think it's really going to set you apart as a writer. And I really applaud you for taking a different route than what the norm is. So that's exciting.
Well, Well, thank you very much. I appreciate that. I hope so too. And what you said hit home with me, or I guess has hit home with me before you said it, was reaching the readers. And that's, you know, I've been writing a long, long time, and it didn't really dawn on me until recently that that's what I'm now trying to do. So, yeah, that's kind of, once you get past the skill levels of actually being able to put sentences down, and, you know, you get that part down, now it's how can I entertain people? How can I, make people happy? So, yeah.
You know, I think in closing for tonight's show, I think a lot of times the writer is so concentrating on the material that they want people to write that they see all of the backstory and they know what's going on. I have several story plots in my head of events that happened before the time frame of the book. And like you said, you could take different things and do like little spinoffs and do smaller novellas and that kind of thing. And, you know, I think there's room for a lot of different avenues for everyone to try. And I want to applaud everyone who is trying to write and trying to get there, because we will get there. You just have to stick with it. And, I really think that this is going to be the year that we're going to see a lot of self-published authors really climb the ranks in some of these like book billboards and people who are giving testimonies and they're giving reviews and they're doing this. I think this year is really going to be a popping year because self-publishing is definitely taking a front row seat. So guys, we're gonna close up here tonight, but I want to thank Kenny for being on the show with me tonight and giving us a writer's perspective of editing. It has been an absolute privilege to have you here on the show, and I hope we can have you back again soon.
Yeah, absolutely. Thanks so much. I had a great time.
All right, guys, keep your editing up, and we'll be back next month.